Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we welcome our friend Tug to the podcast.
Tug. Is that a nickname or something?
Why, yes. It's short for Tugnacious. Okay, Patrick, this is exciting. We are in a new year. I think we've discussed that already. We've acknowledged that with some, I think, hope and moderate trepidation, but mostly hope.
Yeah.
And one thing we like to do each new year is check in with our friend Tug Baker down in South Carolina, because every January he does this really interesting sort of music, I don't know if you call it an experiment, experience.
Yep.
What have you. And so over the next three days, you know, fortunately, like, long distance charges aren't like they used to, so we can keep on the line for 3 days. So for the next three days. We're going to talk with Tug about three different artists, and I'll let him explain. But anyway, this show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us is
Tug Baker. Hello, guys.
Hey, how you
Good
doing?
Good to hear your voice, man. Good to hear your voice. Yeah.
How you been? We haven't talked to you in a year.
It's been a year. I think we chat a little bit on Facebook.
We do. And
the group,
we'll get
and everything
to that.
But yeah, good to see you guys. Good to see you're holding up. You guys have your quarantine beards going.
And, yeah, that's right.
And I like those. Those are nice. I'm always happy to see facial hair.
Not like yours.
Mine has it's become its own thing.
It has.
Well, so two quick things I want to talk about before we get to today's topic for real. One thing is, let's talk about that. So my quarantine beard, this is the first time in my life I've ever grown a beard. I'm kind of happy with it. You know, it's a little bit patchy in places, but it looks all right. So I'm happy with it. Patrick used to be an annual beard grower, right? Mm-hmm. You do like the winter and then shave it off in the spring, and that's kind of been your practice for how long? How long have you done that, Patrick?
Ever since I started copying my friend Andy when he started doing
it.
So probably sometime in the 90s, I would imagine.
Okay. But Tug here, man, this has been a long-term project for you. When did you start growing that beard?
Yeah. I mean, I've had a beard. I think it's been maybe 8 years ago. I shaved my beard to do a drag show, like a charity drag show thing.
Okay.
And that was the first time that I had been without facial hair since like college. Like, it's in some form or another. Like, but this, I basically had a beard whenever my son was born 5 years ago, and just, I've trimmed it up, but since quarantine started, there's no reason to even do that. So right. I'm still doing a little maintenance, but this is definitely the longest it's ever been.
It's amazing.
It's
and you know what's interesting, and I don't know why this is, but like, we have a barber shop here in Falls Church, and it kind of reminds me of some of the barber shops they would have down in Richmond. But all the guys that work there have these long beards. It's so interesting to me that I was going to say, you could work in the barber shop in Falls Church. You've gotten it long enough now.
the guy who cuts my hair has a nice long, you know, full beard. Like, and it's part of, like, you know, one of the reasons I go to him is like, well, you know, like,
yes,
you've got that big beard.
Like, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you know what it needs to look like. Yeah.
Right. I mean, my first thought when you said that, Patrick, was it seemed counterintuitive. It's sort of like you work in a place where like, cutting hair is the thing you do, and you have access to all these tools, and so why would you just let it grow? But what you're saying is, because once a beard reaches a certain length, it really takes, it's like head hair, it's like it takes a lot of styling and maintenance and things like that to keep it looking good. And also
it really, like, I kind of, like, I had a big beard, but until quarantine, when I kind of just like could let it go, like, I never got happy with it. Like, it always had just like it's not quite there yet. Like, it's not, you know, and I'd be scared to let it go too much longer. But when we kind of went into lockdown, I was like, okay. And like, now I'm actually pretty happy with it. Like, you know, it needs a little trimming right now, but I'm pretty happy with it finally.
That's
just took
cool.
a global pandemic. That's all.
That's what it was. And you have to wear a 6-foot mask to keep it all in there.
Yep, exactly. I do have a beard mask that goes like further down than the other.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so what I think is interesting, and then we'll get off this side topic here. What I think is, what I wonder is, once things do, whatever that is, return to normal, right, and people are going back to their lives, to, in some sense, the way they used to be, will yep. some of these new habits that we've formed remain? Things like that. Like, like, will we just say, the hell with it? I let our hair grow and our beards grow and wear, you know, pajamas outside and, you know, whatever. Like, you know, why? What's the point of ever putting on a tie again, right? Like, it, you know, it's stupid.
I put on a belt the other day and it felt weird. really weird wearing a belt.
Exactly.
I can't remember the last time I put one of those on. That's hilarious.
So, Tug, explain to us... and for especially for new listeners who haven't heard you on before, explain what it is that you do every January music-wise.
So every January, we are all, I think, people who are super into music, music nerds, we're all super burnt out on listening to everything that we can possibly think about to make our year-end best list. And then the year-end best lists start coming out, so we start listening to other things that we haven't listened to. So by the end of December... I get, you know, I usually get a nice little break for some Christmas music in there. And then and there's not really a ton of new music that comes out in January, but there is some. But I take a break from new music. I say, you know, instead of listening to, you know, going through the new music list every Friday and picking out four or five albums to listen to, I deep dive into classic artists that maybe I'm not as familiar with as I want. You know, it's so easy now with streaming services to just listen to an artist's entire catalog, you know, not have to go hunt down, you know, obscure things or anything like that. So it's it makes it really easy to do, you know, these big deep dives on classic artists, and just to educate myself more. And it's usually people that I've heard of or have some passing, you know. It's very rarely like I've never heard of this person, you know. I at least, you know, do a little research, but yeah, it's led me to some great artists that we've talked about some on here before, for sure.
Yep.
So this January you focused on three artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are
this year was Kathleen Hanna, who very lots of different bands, you know, Bikini Kill, La Tigra, and Julie Ruin. Mm-hmm. She was somebody that I actually knew. I feel like I meant to do her last year, and then just it somehow slipped my mind to do it. But this year, yeah. I was like, or like back in like June, I was like, I have to do Kathleen Hanna this year. Like, I have to. Do you want to talk about the
others? Just say who the others are, then we'll talk about them in depth.
The others we'll cover tomorrow, Bill Withers, who lost this past year, and then Fela Kuti.
Right. Okay.
Which is a big one. And it was an undertaking.
And you settled on these three because you got recommendations from friends and so on?
Yeah, I got recommendations. I ask people on Facebook every year, like, hey, what are some people to do? And there's Kathleen Hanna, I think I came up with pretty much on my own. Bill Withers is one that a couple people had recommended to me. And then just this year it seemed appropriate. Fela Kuti has always been one that especially a lot of my record shop friends recommend to me, and I've just always been so daunted by it. But this year, just perfect storm of working at home and being able to like jam out to it. It just happened that way.
Okay, so today let's focus on Kathleen Hanna and just like kick us off. What did you learn?
So, I mean, I already knew a good bit about Kathleen Hanna. She was probably the one I was most familiar with out of any of these artists. Classic Riot Girl punk band Bikini Kill that she formed. And then, you know, basically just went on to weave her way through, you know, the punk scene and the music scene and really touch on, like, you know, there's all these fun things about her, you know. I was just reading before the thing. I was kind of just doing a like, you know, refresher to, you know, remind me of names of albums and things like that. And I did not realize, apparently, Smells Like Teen Spirit. She wrote on Kurt Cobain's wall, Kurt smells like Teen Spirit, because she thought he smelled like the deodorant, and he did not know what the deodorant was, and that's when he took the name.
Crazy.
I know. Yeah, which is just story. like that's such a weird story, but that shows you, you know. You know, and she dated Mike D, I think, married mm-hmm. Mike D.
Yeah,
you know, and just she's one of these, you know, powerhouses in music that I've never sat down. I've definitely heard lots of Bikini Kill songs, heard lots of La Tigra and Julie Ruin too, but I've never sat down and like been like, all right, start to finish, let's listen to everything. And so that's what I spent pretty much the first week of January doing. And it was great, man. Good release.
I bet. Yep.
So where should we start here? Start with Bikini Kill?
Yeah. So that's the first one. That's a good place to start. And, this is, I'd say, again, you can go and I think on Spotify, it's like, the first two EPs or whatever, are the, kind of packaged together now. But originally it was like, just a little tape, that came out. And man, it's just like, it's some of the best, that first Bikini Kill EP is just some of the best, punk rock music you can get. Like not just, I mean, obviously like it's probably the pinnacle, the start of like Riot Girl movement, but to me, like just an amazing punk record too. So good and so raw, so in your face. I think, the first track, I think was on it was Double Dare Ya, which is just, starts with the, we are Bikini Kill. We want revolution. Girl, stop now. Great sense of humor about them as well. They have, It Hurts My Heart a little bit, but they've got like songs like Twin Peaks Sucks. I have to admit at the time, I don't know, I can see when they were making this music, like Twin Peaks was like people were having Twin Peaks parties, and it was like the Lost of that time. And I bet to punk kids like it was probably really annoying. so many good songs in that first one. Like it's, you can really start to finish go through it. I think my favorite Bikini Kill track is Feels Blind. I feel like it's the epitome of Kathleen Hanna. Like she is this, bundle of, angry, sassy, like energy that, and that song like, catches all that and like just puts it in one track. It's really great stuff.
I know we're going to talk about her different bands that she was in or formed and how different they are. But Bikini Kill, I think, maybe wasn't that well known at the time, and maybe this is a lot of, you know, looking back, right? But I think it's as far as like, you know, female led rock band, I think was really important in that they didn't really follow any of the expected structures that were set up, right? So if you think of like maybe some of the others, like the Go-Go's or you know, even like the Runaways or whatever, they were trying to be part of the boys club to some extent, right? And I don't think that was true with Bikini Kill, right? They were setting their own agenda.
Yeah, they they have songs that, like, they do this great thing, and it's actually something that I feel like she uses throughout her music, throughout all the bands, where they'll have like little interviews that they conducted, you know, with, you know, some dude from, you know, the punk rock scene. Like, I don't know if girls are dressed like that. They're just asking for it, or right, whatever. You know, they'd splice in little bits like that. Read reviews on of one of their shows, like during the song, like, you know, that we have some reviewer that didn't like them and thought they were fake or whatever, you know, stuff like that. It's just, yeah, it's so like different and not, you know, yeah, not trying to be anything like the boys club of punk
right, at
the
time, right, you know. Like, sort of like, we're not going to let others define us. We're going to do our thing. Whereas I think in the in the past, there was this feeling that you had to sort of conform to some extent in order to be accepted, right? And they just weren't interested in that. So
totally.
Yeah. Everything from like style to like all of it was just like, no, we're just doing what we want to do. Like, and you know, that's it.
Yeah. And I'll say too, I think what you said, Tug, about it being some of the best punk music of all time, I totally agree with that. And to me, it kind of reminds me of like what the Buzzcocks did with Spiral Scratch, where they sort of put this record out and we're kind of at the hub of this little, you know, Manchester scene in the 70s. And that's kind of how Bikini Kill were too, you know, with the Northwest scene and that girl power scene and that Riot Girl scene. And, you know, there was that connection with DC. I mean, most of these tracks were recorded at Inner Ear, you know, and they were friends with a lot of those DC bands. And you know, they took that style and that energy. But think about the label Kill Rock Stars too. They were like the central, you know, band on there. So
they were the big band on Kill Rock Stars. Yep. I mean, that first, you know, that first first EP produced by Ian McKay, yep, you know, of Fugazi, like, you know, it's like they were themselves, like, I feel like, you know, so influential right then, like, you know, not I think they continue to be, but I think it was pretty rare at that point to have a band that like came out and I think was, while it was still forming and still becoming a thing, already influencing people while it was happening. Like, you know, like,
totally.
Like,
just that is that, it. That is they're right. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like a zeitgeist of just, you know, like, yeah, that's what is so awesome to me. And what I really like, so many, you know, I don't think we would have gotten any of the awesome, like, you know, late 90s, like, you
totally
know,
agree,
girl, you know, female fronted rock, right, and stuff that we got. I don't think we've gotten any of it without Bikini Kill. And you know, and it's also true, like, talking about how it's not just punk or whatever, like, you know, she's got a great sense of melody and a great,
oh my God,
you know,
yeah,
and you know, and the songs are just so well crafted, like, they really are. Like, it's not just angry, you know, there's some of that, you know, of that angry punk, you know, throw it against the wall, see what sticks, but like, right, they knew what they were doing. They're really amazing performers and songwriters.
Yeah. And you know, they pushed their technical ability to the limit, and you know, they weren't like particularly accomplished. They were much more about the energy, but like you said, they put it all together in a way that really took maximum advantage of the ability they had. And you know, they liked that raw sound of what the Discord bands had done, and in that first wave, and also, like you said, all the bands that popped up, you know, Bratmobile and all these other bands in their wake, like, seemingly right away, and the fanzines, you know, were coming out, the Rock Girl fanzines and everything. It was just like on all fronts, they were like a whirling dervish. It was amazing.
Just revolutionary. Just amazing.
Totally.
So good.
Okay, so Tug, where's Kathleen Hanna take us after Bikini Kill?
So, you know, like a lot of great great bands, you know, Bikini Kill kind of, you know, happily disbanded late 90s. That's when I think she started working on Julie Ruin around that time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that's basically just her solo project whenever she wants it to be, I feel like. But I think the next big thing was La Tigra, which is actually, like, you know, going into this, I probably knew more La Tigra than I knew Bikini Kill, just because that's when that was, like, you know, early aughts when I was, like, at the college radio station, like, you know, those albums were coming in and I was, you know, playing them on my show and stuff. So I'm definitely more familiar with La Tigra than Bikini Kill when I started this. But I still really, man, I love La Tigra so much. It yeah. takes that, that first record especially, like, takes that punk edge that Kathleen had from, and really all her projects are always going to have that edge to them. Mm-hmm. But it adds in some kind of, like, that fun, like, New York art school DIY, you know, thing, like, with, you know, little, you know, keyboards and, you know, adding in little keys and, you know, drum machines and things like that. And it's just, I love it. The also I will say I've listened to a lot of La Tigra over the past couple of years, because Decepticon, the first track off their first album, is, my son's a big Transformers fan. So one day, just like you know, trying to, like, find something that's not, like, you know, a theme song or whatever for him to listen to, I'm like, I don't know, like, is there a Decepticon? Oh wait, oh yeah, there's that La Tigra song, Decepticon. I start playing it for him, and he's like, yeah. So I can honestly say it is now his taste changed from day to day, but it is consistently one of his favorite songs. And, like, when it comes on, like, a mix or whatever that I have for him, like, I'll see him, like, you know, playing with his Legos and just, like, singing along with it, which wow. is pretty awesome to see.
That's yeah. a cool 5-year-old, man. It's an amazing record, man. Those first two are so good. And, you know, like you said, I mean, there's a track, What's Your Take on Cassavetes? Like, that's that art edge, you know, that's kind yep. of in there, and yet it's totally danceable. Hot Topic is an amazing song too. Those first two records are great, and you know, the makeup of the band also, you know, pushed some boundaries toward you know, LGBTQ. They were amazingly fun band to see live. I mean, I can remember seeing them at the Black Cat right when the first record came out, and Kathleen was so funny between songs, like you said. I mean, her sense of humor is so sharp and so pointed, and, you know, not in a sarcastic or kind of a biting way, but just in, like, a relatable human emotion kind of a way. I mean, I'll never forget yeah. her introducing one song saying, This is a song written when you feel like just laying in your bedroom and doing a puzzle of the Baby Muppets. And they, like, rip into the song. I mean, you know, it's just amazing how she translated this raw emotional intelligence she had. And these are great records. And I don't know if they're as well known, you know, maybe a few tracks here and there, but both the records, well, there's more than two, but I tend to gravitate toward the first The first two in the catalog, for sure, the self-titled one, and then Feminist Sweepstakes, the second one.
Yeah, those are, I mean, yeah, they have the big hits. You know, TKO has been on my running playlist for 15 years, probably.
Right.
Like, such a good song. And what really struck me about coming back and listening to those records all the way through instead of just, like, listening to a song here and there is I had really forgotten how much they were... You know, when I was listening to them, I was like, man, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me a lot of, like, LCD Sound System. It reminds me of, like, you know, like, you know, it's got, like, a rock edge, but it's got this little bit of, like, you know, electronics and keys behind it. And so I was like, is that a connection? Like, you know, it's like New York around the same time. Like, you know, what's the, and so I, like, you know, did some Googling on it. And, you know, one of the first, James Murphy's little DJ project, DFA, I think was the name of it. One of the first big tracks that DFA remixed was Decepticon. And they have this like really slow, like, you know, slow, but like a good like beat that you could still dance to version of Decepticon. And I was like, that it totally makes sense. Like, this is like what was going on in New York at that time.
Right.
And so, yes, it's interesting to see like, you know, all those influences kind of coming together.
Totally. Well said. Yeah, it's right. It was right in the pocket for that time and right on the edge of it, too, which is amazing.
And do you think that for somebody who doesn't necessarily know Kathleen Hanna's work, how would you compare these two bands, right? Like, I think I'm trying to say this without it being leading, but maybe there's no way. Like to the average person, they might sound like it's not the same person, right? It's not the same artist, right?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Like, right, you listen to one and it's like, well, if I go to that show, I might get spit on. And then you listen to the other and say, well, I might get like confetti thrown at me.
That's right. like glitter.
That's the feeling that I get from them. But I mean, I don't know. But I feel like that they do some of the same things still. Like I said, like they do the, like, you know, putting little like news reports or, and things like that in. Like, they're still political and they're still in your face. But I don't know, maybe in a little bouncier package. You know.
And that's why I think you've already anticipated what I was going to ask, which was basically like, how do you reconcile that? And that's because I think there is still a lot of that same spirit, and that's the common thread, right?
Same energy. Same drive, without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay.
And, so and that same emotional intelligence. I mean, that's, I think, the overriding thread in all of her creations, whether it be a spoken word piece or a fanzine or writing on someone's wall. You know?
Right. Okay. So then what's the last piece of this puzzle?
Last piece is Julie Ruin, which is, again, like, you know, I guess you could call it a solo project, but she's worked with some of the same people on different ones. And that's probably like, but started like doing stuff in like 1997. But probably more what people are going to listen to is like the, I think it's a 2013, album Run Fast, which is really good. Lead single Oh Come On. Like it does to me kind of become this, like, I don't think that there's a way to say that it's like an older and wiser Kathleen Hanna, but it does feel, it feels like this, a good merging of the other two. It's a little more rock centric, I guess, but still has some of the, I don't know, it's the Julie Ruin probably, I mean, I think those first two, like, bands, I don't know if you're going to compare with the rawness of, you know, Bikini Kill. I don't know if you're ever going to get that again or get the, like, fun of La Tigra again. But, I mean, I think it's still great music. She still, you know, has such a presence that it's undeniable. And I think one of the, you know, a great voice. Like, I would recommend anybody who likes any of her music to check out the punk singer, the film.
Yep.
That, you know, kind of goes yep. through her life. It's been a couple years since I've seen it, but I remember me and my wife going to see it in theater and loving it. It was great. And it talks about, like, she's had a lot of health problems and things like that. You know, and it's but yeah, she's still, man, still around, still being awesome, still funny. I saw, like, you know, people do cameo birthday presents and stuff now, and, like, I saw a friend of mine, somebody bought her a Kathleen Hanna, you know, cameo, and she posted it. She was so sweet. She was just like I hear you're playing guitar, and, like, she's just so nice. Oh, and so cool. Funny, like you said, like, she's got, like, such a cool, like, sense of humor, and she's just, you know, she's an awesome person all around.
Yeah, and I think what you raised about that documentary is really important, Tug, because you know, even through what turned out to be a disease, she never knew what it was until finally, you know, after years, they diagnosed it as Lyme disease. And that's just one of the most energy sapping, you know, things you can have. Right. And she fought through that the whole time, you know.
Right. Yeah. She was dealing with that way back. Like,
it's amazing. Like, yeah. Never knew. And yet still put this other band together and like you said, did all that stuff and, like, kind of never slowed down, even in the face of that, which is, you know, kind of most people would just shut down and turn the lights off and get under the covers for, you know, months. And, like, oh, yeah. It's like a mono type shut yourself down thing.
Yeah, she's, yeah, truly, you know, just super strong person and just amazing.
Like, and that is a really good documentary. I don't know, like you said, if it's streaming, but it's definitely worth a watch.
Okay, so you're going to be around tomorrow. We'll give you a call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. I'll be here. Okay. Not going anywhere.
That's right. All right. Sounds good. If anyone out there has any thoughts on the work of Kathleen Hanna, you can call and leave a message and we'll put your voice on an upcoming show. The number is 612-440-1984. There you go. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @suburbspod. All right. Let's get out of here. And who are we going to talk about tomorrow?
Bill Withers.
Bill Withers. Okay, sounds good.
Going nice. Back.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Tug Baker.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. So Tug has been my go-to guy, the guy I bounce off my feelings when I was binging the show Avatar: The Last Airbender. I found out that he was a fan. And so, I mean, I was like, pretty regularly, every few episodes or so, I would be like, Tug, I can't believe this just happened or whatever. And you'd be like, just wait, you know, or something like that.